I don't know if you heard it, but the sky's falling. I heard it from some president or congressman or governor or senator, or maybe it was a think tank. I can't remember, but it was recently. It was in the news about the sky falling. Oh, it was some organization, some big company or something, or maybe it was the local legislature, the state legislature. I don't know. Anyway, it was some big announcement that if we don't do this one thing, the sky will fall. I can't remember what that one thing is, but I'm sure that if we don't do it, the sky will fall down. I'm absolutely convinced of it. The sky is falling. Reminds me of the story of Henny Penny, which I just told the kids. It's amazing. They used to tell that story all the time when I was growing up. My grandmother used to read me that story, sit on her lap. But there's a great truth in that story, a wonderful truth. Because what would have happened if Henny Penny made it to the king? And you all know exactly what would happen, because I remember some politician says he never lets a crisis go to waste. So he would have figured out some way to create some sort of program to make sure that whatever he had on his agenda would get accomplished. Because that's what humans do. That's what kings do. Today we're finishing our sermon series called The Foolishness of Christmas. It's the last in our sermon series, and it's based upon Paul's letter to Corinthians, where he says this: the message of the cross is foolish to those who are perishing, but to us who are saved, it is the power of God. And we've been taking a look about how God does things differently than we think about in this world. And today we're going to look and learn that there's more power in the manger than on any throne that has ever existed or will ever exist on the earth today. Reminds me of different forms of government that we've had throughout eternity, well, at least since man has been here. I remember the Israelites wanted a king. They wanted a good and gracious king, and so God put King David on the throne. And King David was a great king. Today, even today, still honored as a great king. If you know the story of King David, he was kind of this little brother, this runt of a brother from Jesse, and he would go out with the sheep all day, but he had one great thing going for him, and that is he would play with his sling, and he would shoot things with his sling. He got pretty good at it. So when Goliath came, David said, I'm going to fight Goliath. I'm not afraid to fight Goliath. And he picks up his sling and he kills Goliath. And lo and behold, David ends up being the king of Israel. What more could you ask for? A humble guy from gentle, humble beginnings who just has no fear and leads the people. He's a great king. Except I'm sure you've all heard the saying that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Here is King David as the king, and he has so much power that when he looks over and finds this beautiful young lady named Bathsheba, he says, I want her, and has an affair with Bathsheba, tries to cover it up, kills Bathsheba's husband in the process, because there is no perfect king. There is no kingdom with a king in it that's going to have a perfect rule, because every king is a sinful person. And when you put all that power in that one little person, at some point that one little person is going to corrupt, be corrupt, say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing, and it's not going to go well. And we all know what happened to David. Even though he was a great king, the kings that came after him were not always so great. So you say to yourself, well, maybe if we could have something less than a king, maybe what we need is an oligarchy. Now, oligarchy is a word, oligos, which is a Greek word which means small or little. And so maybe it's a rule not by a king, but by a group of people. All smart people, kind of a checks and balances on each other. I would say probably that the country of Russia is an oligarchy, if you look at it. But probably the greatest oligarchy that we have today is, I think, the kingdom of Saudi Arabia, where power is concentrated on just a few people. And you think, well, maybe that's the way that we can rule a country, is to have an oligarchy. But the fact is that oligarchies and kings still have centralized power. And when you centralize power in sinful people, they're going to do sinful things. They're going to hold on to power. It's just the sinful condition. So you say, well, maybe we should try a form of government where everybody kind of gets together and they just live for each other. It's been called in various forms communism or socialism. Maybe that's the solution. Well, that has been tried different times. I think the most one that resonates with me the most was William Bradford, who came into the new colonies in the 1700s. And he tried this thing in Jamestown where he said, we're gonna let everybody just kind of grow their own food. We're going to pool it together. And as it pools together, everybody will be fed. But William Bradford, this is what he said. When they did that, it was found to breed much confusion and discontentment and retard much employment. Why? Because the young men that were most able and fit for labor and service did not repine that they should spend their time and strength to work for other men's wives and children without any recompense. And what they found out is that that experiment simply didn't work. Of course, then with all that history, many years ago, they created what they called a representative democracy. And a representative democracy basically divides government into different branches, and each one of them has a checks and balance on each other branch. And you think, well, that is a great way. There's no way that one person could ever control and rule everything without the checks and balances of everybody else. The problem with that, well, there's several problems with that. First of all, did you know how much was spent on the last election of the president and the Congress? $6.5 billion spent just to elect the president and the Congress. That doesn't include all the other races that happened in 2016. What good things could happen with all of that money if we didn't have to fight each other? A united government can do whatever it wants, but when it's a representative government, then you have to fight for resources that are constrained. And so sometimes a divided government will not get things done as quickly as it would happen if it was under a democracy, under a monarchy. And one of the things that happens with representative governments is that things can actually stop. I remember when I was putting the sermon together a couple weeks ago, I was like, Lord, give me a sermon illustration if there's something that could kind of show what happens in representative democracy when they just fight each other, and government just like stops. But I couldn't think of anything. I'm sorry, so didn't answer my prayer there. I don't know. But even at its best, when you're competing for limited resources, a government isn't necessarily going to act in the best interests of its people. It seems to, at times, act in the best interest of the people who have the power, or at least have the vote or the say. And I'll pick on my own organization that I used to be a part of, the American Society of Civil Engineers, all right? They're a group that has to kind of maintain the infrastructure of the United States. And they have looked at the infrastructure of the United States, and they came out with a report a couple years ago that said in order to kind of keep the infrastructure going, we need $2 trillion in the United States over the next 10 years, or $200 billion a year over the next 10 years in order to make sure that we can maintain our infrastructure. Now, I have no idea if that's true or not. I really don't. But you got to consider the source. It's the civil engineers, all right? Who's going to, well, first of all, yeah. They never lie. Just want you to know, they never lie. They never line their own pockets. They never look at their own interests over the interests of anybody else. You know that's not true. And that's just one department of all the departments. You look around at the world and you say, what is the government that will really work? Oh, I know. Let's abolish government altogether. Laissez-faire. Well, Luther actually talked about that because The question was put to him 500 years ago. This is what he said. If anyone attempted to rule the world by the gospel and to abolish all temporal laws and sword on the plea that all are baptized and are Christian, and that according to the gospel there should be among them no law or sword or need for either, pray tell me, friend, what would he be doing? He would be loosing the ropes and chains of the savage wild beasts and letting them bite and mangle everyone, meanwhile insisting that there were harmless, tame, and gentle creatures, but I would have the proof in my wounds. Just so would the wicked under the name of Christian abuse evangelical freedom, carry on in their rascality, and insist that they were Christians subject neither to law or sword, as somebody already raving and ranting. See, Luther got to the heart of it. There is no form of government that is going to be perfect, because the governed are all sinful people. And at some level, every single one of us looks out for our own needs, perhaps more than we look out for the needs of everybody else. And when that's the case, we're always going to fight for our own needs as opposed to everybody else. No matter how hard we try, no matter how much we love, our mission statement, make loving disciples, let's love God, let's love our neighbor, and we know that we should do that, and yet how many times do we fail and just look out at our own needs instead? And there is no king, there's no monarchy, there's no oligarchy, there's no representative democracy, there's no socialism, there's no form of government, even no government, that's going to solve the human condition. So when Jesus came 2,000 years ago, and they expected him to go right to Jerusalem and to sit on the throne, where did he come? He came to a manger. He went to a humble beginning. That's what Paul says. He says, for consider your calling, brothers. Not many of you were wise. Not many of you were powerful. Not many of you were noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to change the wise, to shame the wise, and God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God's power is not worldly power. God's power is greater than worldly power, and God's power exists in that babe in Bethlehem. I don't care what government you have. I don't care how strong and wonderful it is. I don't care if we move to artificial intelligence and artificial intelligence judges rightly and wonderfully. The fact is, this universe, this world that we're on, every expert says that it's either going to go out in a whimper or go out in a bang. And no government or no power or no science or no technology, no amount of money is going to be able to solve that issue. But the one that can is the babe in Bethlehem. A simple child. Listen to what Paul says. This is just amazing. It's our theme for this whole sermon series. The message of the cross is foolish to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. Because Jesus came, dwelt among us, it doesn't matter what form of government we have, because his kingdom isn't of this world. Even though it exists in this world, his kingdom is a kingdom beyond this world. And he came to show us that kingdom, to live among us and to buy and purchase us so that we would always live with him in that kingdom. We are co-heirs with Christ in a kingdom greater than any power in this world. That's the foolishness of the cross. That's the foolishness that we believe. But it's a foolishness that has power. Foolishness that has power because of Jesus. May you have that power this Christmas. In his name, amen.